Aaron Berggreen, Frank Vignola, and Sean Eli. Welcome to another episode of Coffee in the Clouds with comedians. How you guys doing?
Good.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, these sessions are getting better and better and better. Don't tell the first group, but so we're going to go around the room, but ladies first. Karen, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, I am a comic. I'm an author and I'm a mom, but right now I'm really a short order cook and a housekeeper. I would say housekeeper, I'm terrible at it, but it's really what I spend most of my time doing.
Are you getting paid for all of the above? Getting paid for everything or no?
the money for the comedy has decreased a little bit. The author stuff, it depends. The housekeeping, I get no money. But I should be getting much more. I should be getting like $75,000 a week.
Is that what you pay your housekeeper, $75,000 a week?
You know what it is? It's that it's housekeeping that's kind of combined with people yelling at me constantly. So there's a lot of emotional aspects to it. So.
Karen, I've known you for 15 years. I'm suspecting you do your share of yelling.
I am a big yeller. I'm horrible. I lose my temper all the time. But right now, I have to say that everybody around me loses it more.
Oh.
So Frank, who do you yell at?
I just would like to say that you said ladies first, and then Sean jumped on Karen. So when the social media campaign starts, I want everybody to realize that I stayed entirely out of the last segment.
Totally. You are out of the hashtag ladies first question mark.
Except you can't get the question mark in the hashtag.
Comes
up ladies first, right? Same deal, pretty much. As a matter of fact, I know Karen for years. Let me also throw in there, Karen is one of the finest comedy teachers in the city. And I know Sean, and I've worked with Sean with his two enterprises. I'm a comic. I've been a comic, actually, I'd say professionally for like 25 years, but since the first time I touched a mic, it's literally 30 years this month.
Wow.
30 years, July 1990, my first open mic in Wilmington, Delaware, in a Scarpetti room, of all things. Many, many years ago. And I did some teaching along the way myself. And I think like a lot of other people, we're just making do as best we can. And I think some of us are grateful that the government decided to include gig workers in the help that they were giving in response to the pandemic. Hmm. So, that's about it. But as far as comedy goes, like, I don't know. It took me a little while to get used to these remote shows. Didn't really want to surrender at first to remote shows. Now getting into it, though. Now starting to learn the tricks a little bit of how to do them. As a matter of fact, I do my own every Tuesday night now. And I'm going to plan on doing that until we get into phase four, whenever that happens. Mm-hmm. And what else? I guess now I'm sort of like a club and corporate type comic. I've been around long enough to do a lot of those elder statesman type gigs. I don't know. Here's the problem with all this remote stuff. This is why I don't like not being live. I tend to just yammer until somebody stops.
No, but I love everything that you're saying.
Right? There's no verbal clues. Like when you're in person with somebody and you're talking to them, you get a verbal clue, right? Or you get a physical clue. That's the end of the statement. That's the end of the thought. I'm barred. Move on. There's some sort of interruption. There's none of that online. You can just plow through and word salad your way through an entire endeavor. So I'm trying to get better at not doing that. Like right now, I'm talking over Sean, although I have to admit part of that is on purpose.
Well, Frank, I was starting to say, yet you jumped on me when I interrupted Karen, and now you're saying people should be interrupting more.
Because I think everybody knows I like Karen more than I like you. I think that's just, we all know that.
Well, are you guys, aren't you seeing I'm applauding? Don't you see my little hand clapping?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw
that. I think the title of this episode should be Frank Likes Karen Better Than Sean.
I think the title of this episode, and we should try and make it go viral, is Frank Likes a Karen.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
I noticed that Frank, not Karen, is the
one. Hey, wait a minute. Didn't I set you up for a softball there? Aren't you supposed to know?
Well, no. I mean, I have to say, it is really hard for me to be a Karen during this time because I am somebody who likes to speak to the manager. It's very hard for me. You know, often people are playing their music too loud, right? Sometimes I know when I go to a store that the person is being dishonest with me when they say they've run out of a product because they don't want to go into the back, right, and check it out. I think that I should be allowed to say, may I speak to a manager? And now, though, when I call, like, Amazon and complain about my delivery or something and they say, what's your name? I just say Ivanka.
There is a movement to change the Karen to Ivanka. So that may you may get your wish.
Well, you know how Americans, when they travel abroad, often will say they're from Canada, if anybody asks. Right. I think a lot of Karens are now saying that their name is actually Tracy. I don't know, something else.
I think, well, you know what? I have to say, I know a lot of Jessicas who fit this profile and Amy's, but I think there's like one of each name. I don't really, I mean, Whoopi Goldberg is named Karen.
What's your middle name?
I don't have a middle name.
Well, we're going to give you one by the end of the show.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be called Elizabeth. I liked that name very much. You know, Elizabeth has a crown. And I like that idea. It just seems like Elizabeth's get a free pass.
So wait, so you're going from Karen with its reputation to claiming the name of a queen.
Right.
I think it's pushing it.
Okay.
But they have a pass.
I got to jump in here. Two things. I'm gonna use this as a segue. One is, and this is about Carl Reiner, of all things. One is, who we just lost. The Elizabeth as the middle name is hysterical, because we all know with Mel Brooks, it's Adolf Elizabeth Hitler.
Right.
And the producers, right? And then also, you said you don't have a middle name, and there is a brilliant episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show where they explain to Richie that his middle name is Rosebud.
Right.
Because they took a letter from everybody's name who wanted him named after him. So, and I just wanted to mention Carl Reiner since we
That's
have
like,
four comics
Thank
on
you.
Here. And the middle name thing. But yes, it's Adolf Elizabeth Hitler and the producers, right?
So that way Hitler and I will have something in common.
So what would you guys be doing if we were not in the throes of a pandemic? What would life be bringing you right now if we were, quote unquote, in normal? All three of you. Karen, why don't you go first?
Well, I would be probably, like, it's Friday. I might be on my way to a gig out of town. Or my kids would be in camp, so I might be going on a weekend out of town with my husband. I might be at an audition for something. I might be working with one of my students, like a one-on-one coaching situation. I might be at the gym. Mm. I probably wouldn't be here. I probably wouldn't be in my kitchen.
Strawn, what would you be doing?
I've been traveling internationally more, so perhaps I'd be somewhere in the Southern Hemisphere since it's the summertime, looking for shows to do. Because I miss it. I mean, I got to travel the world the last couple of years and do shows overseas. Or I might be just, you know, driving my Honda with Karen in the front and Frank in the back on the way to a gig in Maryland or something. So, no.
What do you got, Frank?
Mine is very much like Karen's, I think. You know, you would hope on a Friday night that you would be getting ready for a gig of some kind. And it might be a road gig, and it might be like Sean said, where, you know, we might be in Sean's car or whatever way you get to the road gig. I don't know about these guys. I mostly just work like the Eastern Seaboard these days. I don't seem to go much north of Maine. I don't seem to go much south of Virginia and DC and maybe Eastern Ohio. Like that triangle is the most that I seem to travel. But a lot of it's tri-state area stuff. So you're in somebody's car, or you're taking the Metro North to White Plains, or New Jersey Transit to Secaucus Junction, and somebody's picking you up, and then you're going to do the gig. Or if you're lucky and you have a little bit of juice, maybe you got a couple of city spots. Those normally start a little later. So at least you're, you know, you have a little bit more time to yourself because there's not as much travel. I don't do a class anymore, but I still do private coaching. So I might also be working with a student, which would probably be, if we weren't doing this, meeting them at a coffee shop near whatever club I was at that night. And I would say that you might do this if you were like doing somebody's podcast or something, mm-hmm. right? Because people did do call-ins and remotes on podcasts. People Skyped and stuff, some for that. But I would say kind of like whatever Karen's doing, I would be doing. It's just hers would be paying better.
I have to say, just to translate, when Frank says city spots, he means probably a 20-minute spot at a comedy club in New York City, 20 minutes of a show. And Frank, as far as your teaching, I'm sad to hear you're not teaching groups anymore, because you described your teaching once as the boot camp of comedy, and it kind of was.
That's a double-edged sword, my friend. That's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, but I know push-ups because of that.
You know, I mean, and it's weird the way that it happened, because I've had a couple of false retirements from class teaching already, where I said I wasn't going to do it anymore and then picked it back up. But before the pandemic even hit with my last class, it had ended in February, I said, I'm not going to do any more classes. I'm just going to do privates and then do the occasional workshop for the group setting and even set up a workshop. And then the pandemic hit. So I've still been able to work with people privately. But even if I wanted to go back on the class thing, I couldn't. I did actually teach a free remote class last week, and that was kind of fun.
I teach a lot of classes, like group classes through the Zoom.
I've only done one so far.
I've had five sessions, 6 weeks. And we all get so close to each other. In fact, I had a class that started on March 19th. It was supposed to start on the 12th live. We switched over to Zoom on the 19th. There were 15 of us. And then the class ended 6 weeks later, and we still meet every Thursday and have an informal, it's not through the school. It's just we're all just so kind of, it's like we were in the war together, and we mm-hmm. all meet. We do maybe an hour of comedy stuff, and then we all just drink until we're exhausted and talk about Netflix.
So what do you do?
It's actually the best night of the week for me.
So what do you two do when you have a student who just doesn't get it, or is really just raunchy and not funny, but just disgusting? How do you handle that in a class situation?
Are you talking about now during the pandemic, or are you talking about regular?
Yeah. Both.
You wanna take that, Frank?
Sure, okay. So if I have a student that really raunchy, I will try and explain to them that there are places you can work dirty, but you can't work dirty everywhere. So if you can work clean, you'll get more work, because a dirty comic can't work in a clean setting, but a clean comic, if they're good, can work somewhere where dirty material works as well. I'll also try and explain to them that it's not so much about the response that they're getting from their immediate circle, but it's more gonna be about, once they start auditioning for things, whether or not industry and whether or not bigger picture things like clubs and festivals and TV is going to want that kind of material. Because at some level, when you're new, you might be funny and other people at the open mic aren't. But once you get to a certain level and you're really auditioning for stuff, it's a given everybody on that level has talent. So it's, how are you getting those laughs? And if you're getting those laughs by being raunchy, in my personal opinion, you're really not going to go that far. So that's how I feel about it if you're talking about a raunchy person. But sometimes somebody that does raunchy material can be a good student. There are students that are disruptive. And quite frankly, I don't have the best track record dealing with them. I'm just going to be honest. It's sort of like if you're disruptive, then I'm not quite sure why you're here in the first place. So you're still welcome to participate, but this is not a debating society. And what you're paying me for is my opinion. So that's what I'm going to give you. Although, but I do try and offer, also preface it by saying to people, what do you want out of comedy? Because that's going to determine the kind of notes that you get from me. Because if you want to audition for Gotham versus somebody who's just doing it the same way somebody jumps out of an airplane, you're not going to get the same notes on your act, airplane person.
Absolutely.
That's the person who wants to work at Gotham. So you need, so mine is a whole kind of a thing with the boot sergeant thing. I can get a little Lou Gossett Jr. about it, but my whole thing is like telling them the truth, because they didn't hire a cheerleader. They hired a coach. And even Tiger Woods needs somebody to say, hey, there's a hitch in your swing, and you're not going to be competitive until you get that out of there.
So my class, Frank, is a little bit different because I have a mix of people who are sort of boot campy and people who are sort of bucket list. And right. I try to work with people. I say, let me know if you want me to be really hard on you. Otherwise, I just want to get you out of here with 5 minutes. And I do say from the beginning the thing that you say about the raunchy. When the punchline is I'm raunchy, it's not good. Like sometimes they think just because they use like a dirty word or they describe something in detail that nobody else would describe, that they're being clever. And I'm like, there needs to be a joke behind it. So if you have a really genius joke that happens to be really dirty, I'm there for you. But if it's just like because you like were describing body parts and sex in a really descriptive way, it's so not interesting to me, because there are if you go to an open mic, there's 10 people doing that exact joke. And I will say that from the beginning, and it does kind of shut them down. It's not interesting, and we need you to be interesting.
And let me also add to your question, Sean, and I don't know if Karen has had this, but I find that most people that are disruptive or difficult or whatever, with my class, it used to come with an audition for the club. I find a lot of them, I mean, maybe took it for the audition, or maybe took it for the contacts, or maybe took it for some kind of magic shortcut or something. But people that are often difficult in a class don't feel they need the class in the first place. I'm not even sure why they're there. It's kind of like, I think there's a lot of people, there's been a lot of great comics like Chappelle and Ellen and a lot of others that have in the past 15 years made comedy look like you're just talking. And it's the worst thing that ever happened to comedy. Because I think now there are a lot of people that just kind of get up there, just kind of idiosyncratically talk. Their friends tell them they're funny. They think they're ready for things that they're not. And then when they start to get notes, that mirror, they buckle against it a little bit. And they just keep doing what they do, because at the feedback open mic, or their mother or their best friend goes, no, that joke is hysterical and you should keep doing it. I don't care how funny it is, or I don't care how old it is, or I don't care if it sounds like sounds like somebody else's joke. You thought of it too. No, sorry. If you do a joke that sounds like something that Conan did in his monologue 2 weeks later, drop your joke, or people are going to think you're stealing from Conan. I mean, and sometimes people can't hear that why they took the class.
Or you say like, those are outliers for me. I would say 95% of my students are lovely. I mean, some of them are funnier than others, but I will say like, cause I just started a new group and there are some people who really don't understand the concept that you have to have a punchline.
Right.
And they're like, but my stuff is sort of funny. Like, it's just funny. And I'm like, no, it's not. It needs a punchline. It's not, if it's merely amusing, it is not stand-up. It's something else. It's spoken word. It's storytelling. Need a punchline.
And can I also say, when I first came up, now I'm going to sound like an old man who's been at it forever. But when I first came up, you paid your dues. And part of that was like, you know, if a headliner said to you as an open micer, I was standing in the back of the room and that joke is funny, you would live off of that for 6 months.
It was like getting a deal.
It's so amazing. You know, Rich Voss, the first time I walked into Stand Up New York, Rich Voss walks up to me, I don't even know if he ever even remembers this, smiles, says, what's your name again? I'm like, Frank McNoy. He's like, oh, yeah, I've heard about you. How long you been doing this? And I said, 6 months. And he goes, 6 months? Go get me a fucking cup of coffee. And everybody starts laughing. Nobody does that kind of stuff anymore. And I don't know. And obviously, I'm not trying to like make fun of Rich or say, is that good to do? What I'm just saying is there's no hazing anymore. Not that hazing is a good thing, but not even lightly. There's not like a sense of who's who anymore. There's not like, you know, one time I was sitting in Roger Paul's office, and Lewis Black said to me, was kind enough to say, when I said, how do you do so much great political material? He goes, you know what you do? You do two for them and one for you. Do two for them and one for you, you'll be fine. I just don't see those moments happening anymore. Mm. I don't know if it's
anxiety.
I don't know if it's, I'm just a crotchety old man now. Am I one step from yelling, hey, you kids, get off my lawn? Maybe.
Yeah, Frank, I think part of the thing, I want to go back to something you said before about, you know, why are troublemakers and disruptive people taking their class? And I think those are the people who are the class clowns growing up, and they got a lot of attention, and they think that interrupting the teacher is comedy. And so that's what they continue to do. And yet, Karen, there are people, when I started out, sometimes people would say, you know, that's not stand-up comedy, that's an essay. And I think if something's humorous but not laugh out loud funny, that's the kind of thing that deserves to be written down and submitted to the New Yorker rather than on stage.
It's not even that, Sean. They don't even get there. What they do now is all new people doing, 99% of the people I run into doing new comedy now, because they think they could just talk, are basically doing a mildly amusing one-person show. A segment from a mildly amusing one-person show is what it feels like.
I think there's some of those, but I think there's a lot of people who are, I have to say, some of my students are so funny. In some ways, the bar of jokes has been raised.
I agree.
And then there's like two camps. There's this one person show thing where it's like, I'm sort of so interesting and my life has been so interesting. I've had so many interesting things happen, and that's going to just come out because I'm that interesting. I think there's that camp. And then there are people who are all about the joke and not enough about themselves. And so I want them to get a little bit more themselves into how they deliver their jokes. I want them to be fully committed to what they're doing. But I do try to, like, the one person show people, and I think it's because I'm female, I do try to really work with them and strain out, like I say, the joke colander, like throw everything in and we'll get rid of all the water, and like we'll have a couple of strands of spaghetti there that we can, you know, turn into something. But it is like a lot of really wordy shit about like crazy family shit. And by the way, I get that. It's just not, you know. And by the way, when I wrote my first novel, I thought I did a lot of that too. And I remember my agent was like, okay, why did you include this? I'm like, because I thought it was sort of like an interesting observation. And she was like, well, if it doesn't have anything to do with the character development or moving the story forward, you have to get rid of it. It's similar. It's like you have to just really be disciplined about getting rid of crap.
And that's the hardest thing is throwing away jokes.
Well, two things, and I'll keep it really short. One is that I feel that a lot of people now, and maybe it's generational because it seems like a lot of younger comics, they seem to have this stream of consciousness, point of view that they write, where they'll write a joke, and it is so fiercely autobiographical and the way they think, almost like a blog or something, that it might be all they have, but their belief in it is so intense that I will be amazed sometimes seeing people that are brand new when the planets align, hitting the stage and doing something that is like fiercely unique and original and being like, this person is crushing. Unfortunately, what happens is then they'll get in front of a club on a night when it's the planets don't align and it's not their crowd and that's all they've got. So now they just feel like they're reciting spoken word. But I will say that I remember once doing a bar show and doing this bar show, and a kid got on stage at a bar show with 20 comics on it on the Upper East Side and a bunch of drunks at the bar, and started like talking about, trying to do material about coming out to his parents over the last holiday. And I was like, that's brave. Like, we wanted to get laughs. I wanted to get laughs when I started out. I was writing jokes, right? I mean, you know, you would look at guys like Bill Hicks and Robin Williams as the two polar opposites. This kid is up there like doing psychotherapeutic comedy on a bar show about coming out. How much bravery does that take? I mean,
some of that stuff is really, really, some of that really honest shit.
You got to applaud it. You have to applaud that.
Is brilliant. I mean, some of it is really, because I do think when you really go to the truth of the matter and it's something dramatic, the cross between sort of really intense drama and comedy, like when you hit that line, is beautiful. But I agree, like if you don't get it the right way, this is why it takes years. If you don't hit it the right way, it just looks like dreck.
Well, that's what's great about being a freshman. I tell a lot of my people that work with me, it gets dangerous when you become a sophomore and you have a little bit of material, because in the beginning, all you have is what you have. You only have that 5 or 7 minutes right now. So just do that and do it like it's the funniest stuff on the face of the planet. You have no other pitch. You have no other options. So just go 110%. It's once you have 12 and you're trying to do a 5 minute set that the craziness begins, because you're trying to start to decide in a given situation what not to do. A lot of them so early on are in such a great position that they kind of have this little tiny 5 minute novel, V-blog, that they've done about themselves, and that's all they got. And come hell or high water, that's what I'm gonna do. That takes a lot of the selection pressure out of it. Because I can't speak for Karen or Sean, but I find now as a comic, the thing that drives me crazy is trying to get ready for something and going, I got an hour and a half of material. What 7 minutes am I going to do?
Yeah, that's the hard
part. To get this gig. You know, that drives me crazy.
But on the other hand, it's at least better than being somebody who thinks he has 12 minutes, but really has seven, and then says, oh, I can do a half hour. And they do 7 minutes, and then they don't know what to do, and then the whole show falls apart.
Well, we all did that. We all pretended we could do longer than we did, and then went out to Governor's and did a spot we weren't ready for, or some version of that.
And your whole face, like, it's like that feeling, too, where your face is just suddenly so hot, and there's sweat everywhere, and you're like, what am I gonna do for the rest?
You're not real a new comic unless the wax in your wings melts once or twice. You know what I mean? You just gotta like fall on your face in a face plant in a way that you did not think was humanly possible.
It's humiliation.
You just got to.
Here's a question, because we're going to wrap up soon. So see if you can answer this one in a minute or less. But we've asked this to most people. You know, I grew up with Carson, you know, Tonight Show, and, you know, the Drew Carey moment or the Ellen moment or, you know, the breakout moment, right? And that was the big deal. That was like, oh, boy, that was the good. Is there anything that rivals that today? Is there anything that's like the doing Carson? And see if you can keep it to a minute or less. Sean, what do you think?
There isn't now, because Carson was the only game in town. So if everybody who was watching TV at 11:30 or 10:30, whenever, that's all there was. And everybody was tuned to that channel. And now you don't just have even three networks. You've got 500, and there's comedy on 50 of them. So there's no defining moment for people, except maybe, you know, if they, well, I guess to host the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the Academy Awards or something, you've already broken out. But there is nothing, I don't think, that comes to that. It's kind of the opposite. What happens is people see somebody with some getting their 15 minutes of fame, not from stand-up, and then getting stand-up opportunities from that, and think, oh, all I have to do is this thing and I'll be famous. And it really hurts them because they don't have the material they need.
Frank, what do you think?
Well, as difficult as it is for me to answer any question in under a minute, I will say that I will say that I think that there are things like getting a Netflix special, doing the Montreal Comedy Festival, being a regular comedic guest on Colbert, numerous appearances. There are things like that that really are like that indicate people on a different level. If there's that individual star maker moment, I'm not sure there's a Carson anymore where you can go from obscurity of waiting tables to your phone ringing off the hook in 24 hours. But there are definitely things. And then I would also, to kind of reiterate what Sean said a little bit, say that it seems now comedy is less about as a concert comic making your name and more about, I got in a TV show, I got in a movie, America got to know who I was, then I went around the country selling out theaters for 50 grand a pop.
Got it.
It seems like there's, right now, it seems like comedy is a lot about getting that intro to that legit TV and film agent that then is gonna get you that TV or film project more so than coming up the way those guys did in the 70s and 80s and early 90s.
Karen, what do you think?
I would say, because I was thinking like, you know, somebody said to me, what would you want to happen to you? Like, I would say, I would want Judd Apatow to see me in a club, and then I'd want him to read my books, and then I'd want him to make a movie with me, either writing it or in it or something like that. I feel like that is like a very, like, it's not Carson from back then, but it's like, he's somehow or another, he's got this, like, you know, this touch in terms of.
Did you already have that in your head before I asked that question?
Me?
Yeah, was that like something?
Never. I was really thinking while you were talking.
But the truth is, and this happened, and by the way, Karen has the talent to be this person. But what happens a lot is maybe Judd's not writing with her or doing the project around her, but he sees her. So then in pick whatever Judd Apatow movie you want, maybe she's not the driving creative force, but she has a principal part in the movie. And now we're off to the race.
Cool.
But by the way, I want like the J roll. My dream job is like J rolls every day. I wouldn't want to be that principal part.
I don't want to
do nudity, Frank.
There you go. And if you don't want to do nudity, then you need to go the Daily Show correspondent route to start on.
Well, this was great. This was fun. This is another one of these. I can't believe 40 minutes just went by because it felt like it was 39. But with that being
said, this is really great.
Stop it. We'll clap for that one.
With that being said, all your bios and your links to your websites and everything and your videos will be on our website. And, you know, this does reach millions of people. I wish I could take more credit for it, but it does. And it's growing. And, you know, thanks to the pandemic, we have even more people joining us now. So I got that going for me, you know. But, guys, this was another session of Coffee in the Clouds. Take care.
Comedians, yes.
With comedians. Yes. With comedians.
With those two. Wherever they are, somewhere on the page.
Bye, guys.
See you guys.